Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Really glad you could join us today because we're about to unlock some pretty fascinating secrets about your own body. I mean, think about it, how you walk, the way you stand, even how you breathe. It's all telling this like ongoing story about your physical self. Have you ever really stopped and wondered what your body's story actually is? And, you know, how maybe even small shifts could make a huge difference in how you feel, how you move. So today we're taking a deep dive into this really incredible guide. It was originally put together for movement professionals, and it unpacks posture, form, alignment, all that good stuff. Our mission here isn't just to tell you like what perfect posture looks like. We want to unravel why it even matters, and crucially, how you can spot those subtle deviations, maybe in yourself, maybe in others, and even how something as basic as your breath is, well, deeply intertwined with it all. So yeah, get ready for maybe some aha moments about your own body.
Yeah, and what's really captivating, I think, is that this isn't just abstract theory. This material comes straight from the Pilates Academy International, and it's all about practical, actionable knowledge. Their core belief, which I think really resonates, is that the goal is simply to help bodies move better, period. And even though it's, you know, written for professionals, understanding these principles is incredibly empowering for your own body awareness. It doesn't matter what your background is. It really gives you the tools to be a more informed participant in your own physical well-being.
Okay, let's start unpacking this. The guide kicks off with something called static posture analysis, which is literally just looking at how someone stands when they're still. But interestingly, it starts with this really crucial kind of human insight. It says, not all clients will want their posture analyzed, even though our goal as movement professionals is to help. It can leave them feeling judged and even lower their self-image. So it's not just mechanics, is it? There's a lot of sensitivity needed here.
Oh, absolutely. That point about self-image, it's so, so critical. You have to approach it carefully. So the guide outlines two main approaches, formal and informal analysis. The formal way uses something called a plumb line. Now, this could be an actual string with a weight or just, you know, a line on a wall or even one you just imagine. The key is where you align it. Right with the front of the lateral malleolus, that's that bony bump on the outside of your ankle. And the reason they picked that spot is because, as the guide says, it's relatively consistent in most humans despite postural deviations. It gives you a solid baseline.
Right, okay. So it's like a reliable anchor point, even if other things are maybe a little off kilter.
Exactly. A starting point for measurement. And then there's the informal approach. And this is where it gets really interesting for just, you know, everyday observation. This is more about just noting your client's alignment and movement habits without necessarily making a big production out of it. Maybe even when they don't realize you're looking. It's less intrusive, but still really effective for training your eye.
That's fascinating. So, okay, when we talk about that ideal alignment, this kind of vertical stacking, what are we actually looking for? Because maybe instead of getting lost in every single anatomical term, the core idea is this precise vertical stacking, right? Minimizing strain, maximizing efficiency. The guide gives us key reference points, especially from the side. So imagine a line dropping straight down from the back of your head through the base of your neck, tip of the shoulder, then down to that bony bit at the front of your hip through your knee joint and landing just in front of that ankle bone we mentioned. Ideally, that imaginary plumb line passes straight through all those points. Basically, your major body parts are just effortlessly stacked. As you're listening, can you kind of feel where that line might fall in your body right now?
Yeah, visualizing that line is really helpful. And once you have that ideal picture in mind, spotting the deviations becomes, well, pretty insightful. Let's touch on a few common ones from that side view, because they often tell us a lot. We see forward head posture all the time. The source specifically mentions it's common in our technologically focused society, which isn't surprising, right? Instead of your ear being over your shoulder, the whole head just drifts forward, creates huge strain. Or you might see the opposite, sort of a hyperextended neck where the chin juts up, or even a neck that looks too flat, like it's lost its natural curve.
Oh man, I can almost feel my own neck tensing up just thinking about that forward head drift. It's such a battle with screens and phones, isn't it?
It really is a constant thing. Moving down a bit, your shoulder joint. Ideally, it lines up with that midline we imagined, but often it's pulled forward or looks kind of rounded. Then the thoracic spine, that's your upper and mid back. We look for a gentle, neutral curve there. Too much rounding is what we call kyphosis, that sort of hunchback look you sometimes see, often in people who sit a lot. And the pelvis, this is a big one, it can tilt anteriorly, tipping forward like you're spilling water out the front of a basin,
Okay, yeah.
or posteriorly, tucking under, spilling it out the back. And connecting this back, these pelvic tilts are huge contributors to things like chronic lower back pain for so many people. And lastly, the knees. They should have a slight natural softness, but you might see hyperextension locking backward, or maybe knees that always seem a bit bent.
That's definitely a lot to take in. For listeners who are just starting to kind of see these things, what's maybe one deviation you think is the most impactful to just become aware of first? Why that one?
That's a good question. I'd probably say either the forward head or the rounded shoulders. They're often pretty visible, easy to spot in yourself and others. And they tend to have this knock-on effect down the rest of the spine, even affecting breathing. So just noticing that can be a really powerful first step.
Makes sense. Start at the top.
Yeah. And remember, it's not just the side view. A proper analysis looks from the front and back, too. From those angles, you might notice if one shoulder is clearly higher than the other, or if the pelvis has a lateral tilt, like one hip is hitched up. You'd also check knee alignment. Are they knock-kneed, pointing inwards, or bow-legged, curving outwards?
So basically you're saying my new hobby of subtly analyzing everyone's posture in the supermarket checkout line is actually productive.
Well, slight chuckle, the guide does literally suggest people watching is a useful way of training your eye. And it's free. You can do it anywhere. You can try that building blocks analogy it mentions. Imagine dividing someone up into blocks: head, torso, pelvis. Are they stacked neatly, or are there tilts or shifts? Then imagine their spine as a line. Is the line straight or curved? It's surprisingly effective. And people really do reveal a lot about themselves by the way they walk, stand, enter a room, text on their phone, carry their bags. You start noticing things. Do they lean on one leg? Does one shoulder dip? Are the shoulders constantly rolled forward? It's fascinating.
Okay, so we've looked at static posture, how our bodies hold themselves when still. But obviously, we're meant to move. And this is where it gets really interesting, I think. The guide moves into dynamic analysis. It says static posture analysis analyzes the form. Dynamic posture and movement analysis looks at the function. It's about putting that stillness into motion.
Exactly. And this shift really highlights a crucial link. Form almost always dictates function. Basically, how your body is built and aligned often determines how well it can move. But, and this is key, it's a feedback loop. Because over time, repetitive function, the way you do move, can actually change your form. We see that with kyphosis, that rounded upper back in desk workers. Their function sitting hunched changes their form over time. Or, conversely, think about ballet dancers or figure skaters. Their specific demanding movements can sometimes lead to a flattened thoracic spine. So function changed their form. The goal, really, for professionals and for ourselves is to help maintain both optimal form and function to avoid limitations, avoid pain, and just keep moving freely.
Wow, that's fascinating. So if I spent years hunched over my keyboard, it's not just a bad habit. My muscles are literally, like, reorganizing themselves to make that posture easier. That's kind of wild. It makes you wonder, too, what about the mental side? Can stress or even just being in a bad mood literally change our physical form, even if our structure is technically okay?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely a two-way street. Chronic stress often manifests physically, right? Tense shoulders, shallow breathing. And if you hold that pattern long enough, it can start to reinforce those physical changes in posture. Dynamic analysis is great for seeing this in action. It asks these crucial questions. Can each joint actually go through its standard range of motion? Are the muscles firing correctly? Like, the right muscle in the right amount at the right time. This sequence is vital. Are there compensations happening? Is one muscle group doing the work for another that's maybe weak or inhibited? And maybe most importantly, can you maintain that core control, that stability throughout a whole movement?
Okay, let's talk range of motion, Rom. It's not the same for every joint, right? The guide gives specifics like your neck flexing 45, 50 degrees, extending 60 degrees. But the main point isn't really about memorizing numbers, is it? It's more about understanding that each joint has this sort of healthy window of movement. And when your movement falls short, or maybe even goes too far, that's when compensations or limits might creep in, like your lower back generally bends forward more than backward.
Exactly right. The numbers are just benchmarks. The real insight isn't memorizing degrees, but recognizing that healthy movement exists within a range, not a fixed point. And honestly, a really simple way you can gauge your own ROM limitations is just by paying attention to your activities of daily living, your ADLs. I often say the best posture test isn't always in a clinic. It's how you feel getting out of bed. Does that hurt? Do you feel stiff or limited putting on your pants or shoes? Is bending down to do housework or gardening a real chore? If you're groaning or moving really stiffly, your body is probably sending you a pretty clear message about its current story, about its available motion.
Right. Listen to the groans. Okay, let's dig into these firing patterns. You mentioned the right muscle amount time. This sounds like the body's internal choreography. The guide says this is crucial for injury prevention and avoiding overdominance of one muscle group. So let's break that down. Right muscle. That means every muscle has its job right, and it should do that job. The guide uses a great analogy. Too many chefs in the kitchen spoil the food. Too many muscles trying to do one thing is just inefficient.
Yeah, exactly. Overkill.
And right amount. Muscles shouldn't push harder or softer than needed. The suitcase example is perfect. Thinking it's heavy, you heave it, but it's empty. Whoosh. Too much force.
Happens all the time.
And finally, right time. Muscles need to switch on when they're needed, not lag behind. The best example given is the core. Walking, running, lifting. Whatever it is, your core should engage first. It's the foundation.
That core first principle is fundamental, and that suitcase analogy for right amount, so relatable. This whole firing pattern concept is huge for professionals guiding clients. The guide mentions specific tests, like a side-lying leg abduction or a simple curl-up, that help reveal these sequences. And what's really useful is the distinction it makes. If you can correct a faulty pattern just with a verbal cue, like engage your glute here, then it's likely just a habit, easy enough to retrain. But if the pattern persists despite the cue, then it's probably a double problem that needs more focused work. This distinction really empowers professionals to effectively train clients out of these imbalances by using the right muscles through repetition and awareness.
Okay, so we know what to look for, why these patterns are so important. But what do we actually do about it? How do we fix things? This next part is all about the how to help our clients improve their alignment and establish proper movement habits. And I love that it stresses the best cue is the one that works for the client. No magic words, just what resonates.
Yes. Individualization is absolutely key. You can't just parrot cues. Let's look at a few memorable examples from the SIMS for alignment. For the pelvis, that basin of water analogy is fantastic. You don't want to spill it forward, back, or sideways. Keep it level. Or thinking of your hip bones like headlights, they should point straight ahead, not down at the floor or up at the ceiling. And when you're sitting, the cue is simply to feel your weight evenly on both sits bones, those bony parts you sit on.
That basin of water one is so good. I can instantly feel myself trying not to spill it. It's much clearer than just saying neutral pelvis, which can feel a bit clinical sometimes.
Makes it tangible, right? For the cervical spine, head and neck, instead of the old tuck your chin cue, which can sometimes just jam the neck.
Yeah, I always found that one awkward.
Me too. The source suggests thinking elf ears. Imagine your ears being gently pulled up and back. It encourages length without that crunching feeling. For the scapula and shoulders, if they're rounded forward, the cue is often to roll the shoulders up, back, and down, find that open spot, and then try to memorize how that feels. If the shoulder blades are kind of pulled wide apart, protracted, the cue is to gently draw your shoulder blades together, but importantly, do not allow them to pitch. Just find the middle ground. And down at the knees and feet, a really useful one is keep your knee tracking in line with your second and third toes. If the knees tend to roll in, you might cue a heavier pinky toe on the outside edge of the foot. If they roll out, cue a heavier big toe.
Little adjustments making big differences. And underneath all of this, the real sort of unseen foundation for posture and movement is breathing. Something we do, 23,000 times a day? And the guy makes this really powerful point. Breathing can never be wrong, but for most everyone, it can be better.
That's such a profound thought, isn't it? Optimal breathing basically means learning to use the right muscles for the job and, maybe even more critically, not engaging extra muscles you don't need. Your main muscles for just quiet, passive breathing are the diaphragm and those little intercostal muscles between your ribs. That's it. But then you have all these secondary or accessory muscles, ones in your neck, shoulders, chest, like the scalens, pecs. They're like your backup singers. They should kick in when you need more air, like during heavy exercise. The problem is when they stay turned on all the time, even when you're just sitting there. It's inefficient, creates unnecessary tension. As the guide says, it can negatively impact posture and movement. Think chronic neck or shoulder tightness sometimes. It's just from how you breathe.
Wow. Okay, so what does this all mean for us? This feels like where everything really connects. The guide emphasizes, optimal posture aids optimal breathing. Makes sense if you're aligned. Your diaphragm has room to move properly, it's easier. And the reverse is also true. Optimal breathing supports optimal posture and proper biomechanics. When the right breathing muscles work, other muscles can relax and do their jobs correctly. It highlights how the diaphragm is actually a key part of your core strength system, working together with the pelvic floor, the deep abs, the multifidus in your back. And if you have something like a rib flare where your lower ribs jut out, that can mess up that whole core relationship.
Absolutely. That core canister connection is vital. So to help people breathe better, it helps to know what causes suboptimal patterns. Often it's just habit. Those secondary muscles just never learn to switch off. Really common in desk workers, especially if they also do intense exercise like running without focusing on breath mechanics. Poor posture itself, like that upper cross syndrome or rib flare, can physically restrict the diaphragm. Emotions play a big role too, nervousness. Anxiety often lead to that shallow, chest-dominant breathing. And sometimes, honestly, it's just confusion. People hear conflicting cues about breathing and get scared of doing it wrong, so they end up holding their breath, which is the worst.
So how do you spot it?
You can often see it. Look at someone's neck and shoulders when they breathe quietly. Can you see those neck muscles, like the sternocleidomastoid, popping out? Are the collarbones or shoulders visibly lifting with each inhale? That's a sign those secondary muscles are working too hard. The correction. Fundamentally, it's about encouraging diaphragmatic breathing. Have you ever tried just placing your hands on your lower ribs or belly and focusing on breathing into your hands, feeling that expansion without letting your shoulders creep up?
Yeah, I have. It feels very different, calmer.
Exactly. That needs to come first. The guide really stresses that proper diaphragmatic breathing must come first before you even start layering on complex abdominal engagement cues. Get the foundation right.
Okay, wow. We have really taken a deep dive today, haven't we, into how understanding all this stuff, posture, movement patterns, even just your breath, can totally shift your awareness of your own body. And remembering that powerful connection. Form influences function. Function influences form. It's this constant dance. And this knowledge, it isn't just for the pros. It's really about empowering you, the listener, to understand and honestly appreciate your body's amazing, complex design.
Absolutely. And the guide finishes on such a great note, emphasizing that professionals need to approach every client with an open mind, recognizing that every client is unique. And that applies just as much to you understanding your own body. Think about those, 23,000 breaths you take every single day? How many of them are really truly supporting your best posture, your best movement? Here's something to ponder. How might even a tiny shift, just a little more awareness of your posture or your breath today, change how you move through the rest of your day? Or maybe just how you feel when you finally sit down tonight?